We want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Chattanooga Shooting Supplies, Inc. CSSI was founded in 1977 by two families that had a passion for hunting and the outdoors. That same passion holds true today for the second generation of family members and their 200-plus employees. Own a gun store or range? If so, you understand the importance of two-step distribution to help you meet the demand of your customers. Their mission is to exceed their customers' expectations with a strong service focus from a knowledgeable sales staff, an assortment of trusted and well-known brands, competitive pricing, and timely shipping. With over 50,000 SKUs of shooting and hunting-related products, they are in the business to help customers succeed. Learn more at ChattanoogaShooting.com.
Iodine is naturally acquired through the soil, which is at the foundation of our entire food supply. Modern farming techniques have stripped the soil of this essential trace element, which has caused an iodine deficiency in about half the population. And there are two things we need to do about it. We need to practice more regenerative farming. There are plenty of proven technologies in permaculture and biodynamics that will naturally keep the soil rich with iodine. And we need to ensure that we get the sufficient amount of iodine every day. Derived from ancient sea salts found thousands of feet below the Earth's surface, our InfoWars Life Survival Shield X3 is hands down the best. Pure nascent iodine, stabilized in an activated tri-iodine form for a healthy thyroid and a healthy metabolism. Get yours now at InfoWarsStore.com.
Katie Armour raised the standard. Finally, AR-500 steel core body armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmour.com, C-A-T-I-armour.com. Come and take it.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
Rampant hacking, identity theft, mass surveillance. Defending yourself today is not an option. It's a requirement. Introducing the Conceal Shield Travel Pack from DefenderShield.com. Conceal Shield is cutting-edge wireless blocking technology that eliminates all signals, including EMF, GPS, and RFID. Place cell phones, credit cards, IDs, and other trackable items into the Conceal Shield, and they become totally invisible. Get Conceal Shield now at DefenderShield.com. Use promo code CONCEAL for 10% off. Guard your privacy, secure your data, and protect your health with Conceal Shield.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have, as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more, up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover SelfDefenseFund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
Now's your chance to get the last of the Resolution Radio Blood Tees. Only a few left available before we try to do a reorder. This has been a high-selling item, and we really appreciate everyone's support in getting this shirt and showing their pride as well as showing their heritage. Nothing counts more than blood. Get yours today from Resolution Radio. Only $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. It really helps the network improve, and you really get a great product to showcase what you truly believe in. Nothing counts more than blood. Only from Resolution Radio at ResolutionRDO.com. Send check, money order, or well-concealed cash to Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066. That's Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, ResolutionRDO.com.
Tony. You know, just like physical illness, mental illness can be overcome. We just got to inspire people to believe that.
The mental health community and the firearms industry have spent way too much time running parallel to each other without communicating. It's time we change the narrative and destroy the stigma that we both face.
Walk the Talk America presents Guns and Mental Health, a podcast for firearms owners, clinicians, and the curious public. Welcome back, and thanks for streaming our content. This is the Walk the Talk America podcast called Guns and Mental Health by, by us, hosted by us. clunky as always. This is great.
Yeah, you're back.
Where did I go? This is great. It's morning. No, I have not been drinking. It's morning on a Thursday. Joining Mike Sudini and I is Timmy O from VeriSafety. Hello, Timmy. How are you?
Hey, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing great.
Your volume might be a little low there, buddy. I don't know if you can kick it up at all, but it's a little low in my ears at least. But you're joining us all the way from the great state of New York, I believe. Is that where you're located today?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
What do you got in the background there? Oh, those are the doors. I thought those were whiteboards, Timmy. I was like, are you in a lab?
No, I'm at home right now. Is my audio a little bit better?
It's getting there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think we're okay. Yeah, it was just very, very quiet and far away. Continuing the clunkiness, that's fine. So why don't you introduce yourself to everybody? Because obviously I'm incompetent and not capable of doing this. Tell us who you are, what you do, and why we're hosting you on this show today.
Yeah, definitely. So I am the co-founder of Vara Safety, and we're a tech company advancing basically fast access safes for protection. We really focus on the aspect of technology in terms of biometrics to enhance fast and reliable access while making sure that only the authorized people can get it. And then we've been developing this technology mainly to address kind of like that big pain point in the market of people who want to be responsible gun owners, keep their firearms secure from children or intruders, but still be able to rapidly defend their family in a time of emergency. So that's kind of how we started out, and we've been we've launched back in like late 2019, early 2020, survived through COVID, and now we're excited to be growing.
Yeah, you launched at a really inopportune time for most businesses, but you made it work. Right. And I can't help but think that the buying spree probably assisted in that. But I'm curious what your motivation was for even going, like, who goes into the safe manufacturing business? You know what I mean? Like, where did that come from and why this direction?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up with firearms because my uncle is in the Los Angeles Police Department. So from a very young age, I was introduced to shooting, loved guns. And when I ended up coming over from California to New York, two very, very restrictive states on firearms, I went to RPI here for mechanical engineering. I had previously done like internships at Raytheon, was focused on trying to go into the defense industry. But interestingly enough, there was an opportunity at the college I was going to where there was an idea competition. The idea that I wanted to focus on was like children getting access to loaded firearms. That was a topic that was often brought up at like family conversations, especially with my uncle in the field that he is in. That was like a topic that came up pretty often. So as an aspiring engineer, I was wondering, is there potential for technology to come in and kind of help work on this problem? And then that's kind of how the project began and snowballed much greater than what I had imagined.
You know, that's pretty rad. So you're an engineer by trade. I want to get that out of the way. Not just like a hobbyist guy who, you know, tinkers with locking mechanisms, but you actually do this for a living and you're trained in it. Mike, what were you going to say there?
No, I was just going to say, it's really interesting because I guess my question to you is, did you understand the firearms culture before you got into this and the pitfalls of technology in terms of like the attitude towards biometrics and things like that? Did you know any of that, or did you learn that on the fly?
I had to learn that on the fly for sure. So the first idea I ever had, I posted it. It was like a barrel lock that kind of goes into the barrel, which of course has a whole bunch of reasons why that's not a good idea. But I posted that idea. Well, how old I was like 17 when I entered college. I posted that idea on AR15.com and it like went viral, but in a really, really bad way where people were like, I'm not going to shove a dildo up my gun. Like, are you insane? Like, this is going to become a hand grenade. So I was getting like thousands of comments. So yeah, I got to learn it the hard way, but I guess it was also the fun way. But yeah, that experience was great because through it all, there was still like a baseline of people being like, this is a great problem that you're working on, but you're going about it the wrong way. And that's why that summer I went to the LAPD in the Firearm Tactics Division to actually do some proper research.
Yeah, I could imagine, you know, you're just thinking you're making something that will help people and trying to do some good. And then all of a sudden you just get hammered, you know? I mean, yeah. And I'll be honest with you, when, you know, I try to pride myself on being like the ungunned gun guy. Like I try to think differently and things like that. But even when I was introduced to your product and I was told about your product, I was still very skeptical. Mm-hmm. And I remember Mike Baker, who used to work for Canon Safe and has a history of being in the firearms industry, was doing some consulting for you. And he came over to my house and he goes, you got to see this product. And it was the Reach One. And mm-hmm. I remember even going up to this being like, okay, whatever, man, like, you know, I'm going to sit here and like destroy this thing, or I'm going to make it, you know, I'm going to play with it in such a way where I prove that, you know, biometric safes aren't the thing. And I remember when it just worked and how quickly it worked. And I remember I was just like, wait a second, let me get my finger wet. Let me, like, I was like literally looking for ways. And I remember getting super excited and I was like, this guy's done it, man. He's like figured out a way to make a biometric that I actually respect. Not that I don't, you know, there's other companies that make some biometrics, but I'd never seen one work as fast and reliable as yours. So then I became a fan of yours.
I have a question because I haven't actually used your product. Sorry. Disclosure. when you say you try to get your finger wet and all that stuff, that is a chief frustration, because the biometric stuff that I've used, chiefly my phone and other people's phones, but also some and the old technology, the phones too, and then the older technology, the safes that just have like a, it looks like for those who are unfamiliar, it looks like if you took a key from your flat like laptop keyboard, it's just a black matte square. It's nothing fancy. It just, I don't know how it does it. I'm sure Timmy will get into this because I'm curious, because I'm a nerd. I'm a science nerd at heart and I want to learn these things too. But the particles get in the way, right? Like dust and, yep, and grease and finger oils. And if you've been playing out in the yard, like you can't unlock your phone. You can't unlock your whatever. Right. But I'm hearing Mike say he basically couldn't make it not work. And I'm curious about that. If I'm just the unassuming listener who's skeptical, because I have some follow-up questions about other products too, convince me as the guy who doesn't know anything about this and is like, oh, lock and key is where it's at. You'll never screw up a key, right? Like tell me why this is important and how you go about maintaining battery life and all that stuff. Like pitch me on the thing and explain it if you would.
Yep. So I guess I can start off with like a quick crash course on fingerprint technology over the last like 20 years or so. I think the first thing is most people, when they think fingerprint technology, and then they, especially when they think about like CSI movies or crime TV shows, and you've seen the thing where you can lift a fingerprint by using like a piece of tape, you dust it off, lift it, and then you can like unlock a fingerprint with it. So that's a really old technology called optical. In short, it's basically taking a picture of your fingerprint, and then it's analyzing that picture. So for all intents and purposes, this is where we get a lot of questions to being like, is my fingerprint data stored in terms of like, do they actually have a picture of my fingerprint? That's all because of this older technology that had been used back in the day. And it's unfortunately that technology is really unreliable because you're trying to compare two different pictures. So if anything gets smudged, if there's like debris in the way, like you were saying, then it's really difficult for that fingerprint program to make a match.
So that was a thing, though. You could lift a print. I know it's Hollywoodized, but you could lift a print and put it in front of the sensor and it would work.
Yep.
That's wild.
And that's been done like on like a whole bunch of like YouTube videos and stuff like that too. And then the new technology that started to come out was called capacitance. And that's kind of where even on like the older laptops, you see like it started off small because the actual material used to make the fingerprint were pretty expensive at the time. But that's where you have to swipe fingerprints. So like on your laptop and other devices where you have to swipe.
I remember that.
So that's now using your body has a natural electrical signal and it's the sensor is actually able to pick up readings off that, in short, to simplify it. And that technology started to progress as the smartphone industry came in. That specific material, silicone, became much more affordable. And now that's why you have like those bigger square sensors. And how that operates is a little bit more different, where it's reading the electrical signals to determine like the valleys and ridges in your fingerprint. And instead of taking a full picture, it's taking a random assortment of data points. And then there's a lot of like really nerdy like algorithms that go into the matching process, but that's kind of how it works. But it takes a fair bit of processing power to get that done effectively. However, in order to kind of make it into a commodity for like gun safes and that sort of stuff, they found out you could relatively get away with like a decent performance while using a cheap processor to just run the software. So the new era entered where there was a ton of gun safes that were like commodity and other security stuff like that, where they're now using these capacitance sensors with relatively cheap silicone and the processor to get kind of like the job done. And that's kind of where I entered around that time, where biometrics weren't really a new thing, but it was something that most people were like, oh, it works like, okay, it works maybe like 7 out of 10 times. It works like I have to try a couple times and it works. And those were the people that were using it and liked it. And so that's kind of the brief, I guess, history and overview of kind of the fingerprint technology.
Among Walk the Talk America's partners, Arms Corps may have the most colorful history of them all. But then again, that likely happens when you have a company that's lasted for more than a century. Started in 1905 in the Philippines and expanding operations to right here to Nevada in 1985, Arms Corps offers some of the finest firearms you'll find on the market, from shotguns to 1911s, and from ammunition to a competitive shooting team. Arms Corps offers a lot, but there's something more. Arms Corps is the first manufacturer to print the free and anonymous mental health screenings link offered through Walk the Talk America's website right there on their packaging. If you buy an Arms Corps product, you will not only see our flyer inside, but you may actually see the screenings link printed on the side of the box. Go to armscor.com, that's armscor.com, to find out more about their heritage, their products, and their competitive shooting team. We're proud and thankful to have Arms Corps as a partner.
Help me understand my phone then, because my phone's one big screen, but there's a small area on the phone that appears to light up really bright. Is that still taking a picture then? Is that the old technology or is that something new?
No, that's the newest one. It's called ultrasonic. So now that's operating in a slightly different way where it's using basically ultrasonic to kind of do the same thing. That one has its own set of advantages and disadvantages.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about processing speed, when I hear that, my feeble brain says, you know, old school CPU with a fan and it's going to overheat, right? I know there's solid state technology that's less of a problem, but what is this processor that's dedicated to scanning and retrieving the information? And why don't we have to worry about that? Because it seems problematic. It seems like too many steps involved if it needs a lot of like power to get this done, but it doesn't seem like that's an issue.
Yeah. So to compare it simply, the gun safes that are out there use the same like processor, essentially the main chip that does all the computing. Their processor is about the same level as like say a coffee maker. The one that we use is the exact same chip that was being used by like GM and Ford in their vehicles. So that's kind of like the drastic difference that we took.
Okay. So you guys really are like at the cutting edge of this emerging technology, and you're pushing it forward to be more responsive, more reliable, better, I guess, better performance overall. And I'm so fascinated by this. I don't even know what to ask next because I'm such a geek at heart, and I've spent all my like last, you know, decade and a half, 2 decades in like the arts field, right? Like the soft sciences of psychotherapy. And so it really piques my interest because I used to be such a nerd, like building my own circuits in my own home when I was like 9 years old. So like I'm like trying to recall 1980s technology and like bridge it into the 2024 world of like biometrics. And it's like, it's sort of making sense, but not really. And so, I guess the next thing I want to ask is like, what do you guys play around with when you're like quote unquote in the lab? You're doing speed, or are you doing like precision or like size, or like what fires you guys up and like makes you want to do this every morning? What are you trying to achieve? What's the overall goal here? Certainly safety, of course, and access, but like internally, what do the nerds talk about when they're nerding out in their nerdery?
That's a good question. I think we don't really focus too much on the technology aspect because that's more of like our work to be done. I think what really does get us excited more is kind of the impact and the opportunities we have to kind of progress this forward. So that's kind of where we've been going into potential like suicide prevention, implementation into like police vehicles, and kind of how we can continue moving technology forward in this industry is what I think.
It's more like product application than it is just coming up with the new cool thing. It's like find a use and then get it there.
Yep. Awesome. Because all in all, biometric technology isn't really that new. It's just a matter of like making sure the company puts enough effort of doing it extremely well and extremely reliable above kind of where the benchmark has been for the last decade or so.
Right.
Right. But as a former business owner, you know, who imported firearms but had a direct contact with manufacturers, it's hard not to listen to consumers, especially when, you know, you have open forums and things like that, or you attend shows. Like I've seen you actually, you know, exhibiting at SHOT Show, right? And everyone, the joke amongst the industry is that people are walking around literally telling you how you're missing the boat and you would sell a ton more of these if you only did this or made it in this color. I mean, you have to stay focused, right? Because you can't please everybody. And did you find that as a challenge? Like, you know, people say, oh, I need to be able to have a light on this thing or my laser or, you know.
Yep. The stuff like the lights and lasers are something that's easy. We know that's a demand. That's a project that we've been working on and on getting out. So we definitely listen to customers in that regard. But I think what was really interesting is more on like the pure business side. It's kind of interesting to realize how we ended up with kind of like the shitty biometrics we have these days. It's because the consumer, tendency is that they do want a much more affordable gun safe. When we did some market research like that sweet spot's more closer to like the $100 mark. And even that's like on the higher end for like a biometric. What they really want. So in order for companies to be able to hit that price point where the majority of people will be purchasing, it's a matter of like, how much can we cut out? Can we use a cheaper processor? Can we use a cheaper sensor? Mm-hmm. And all of that degrades it down. So in a sense, it's like almost comparing like car companies to where like there's the Ferraris of the world, but they don't really do much in sales compared to like Volkswagen. So all these gun safe companies were trying to get the sales of volumes of like an economy budget gun safe, and therefore slowly like giving up the ability to have an extremely reliable sensor and system that you could depend on. And then we're going the opposite way where we are trying to focus on the premium end first. So we do get a lot of comments saying like, this is way too expensive. Like I could buy like another like half of a gun with this type of money. But that's kind of what you have to, like, we focus on, our goal is to make the best, most reliable, And that kind of means not being able to take that huge market share of affordable gun safes.
Yep. I would expect that as the market expands and your products gain popularity because they're reliable and because they're so good, the cost would invariably go down as economies of scale take over, right? Like, is that sort of the Elon Musk, you know, battery wall goal, where you sell so many of them that it just becomes cheap?
It can only go so far. We'll never be able to compete with the gun safes on like China, like on Amazon and stuff like that, that are selling for under $100, because our cost to make it is like almost at that price. So there's like a certain niche that we can focus on, and that's kind of where we have to make sure we stay focused and aligned, because the last thing we want to do is start like there had been conversations where we were like, can we look for a cheaper processor, but we found out that it degrades performance by a significant amount. Same thing with the fingerprint sensor. So
I guess, like anything,
you just pay for what you get, right? Sorry, go ahead.
I would say it's an interesting you know, we talk about we need our firearms reliable. We need to be able to get to them quickly. And then we kind of cheap out on the solution to be able to kick. I have kids, so I have to have my firearms stored responsibly, right? Like, there's just no way I can get around that. And it's not that I don't trust my kids. It's I don't trust my kids' friends. I just don't even want that. I don't want to go there, right? And when I found your product, I was super excited, because it was the first time that I felt like I could really, really trust a biometric. And you have some things built in there too, like the low battery indicator, stuff like that. I absolutely love, and I'll tell you why. One of the things I constantly tell people about their safes is like, keep checking the batteries, make sure they're fresh, right? Like, make sure your safe is up to par, keep practicing with it, so you understand if there's any pitfalls. But like, you're doing your best to try to make it so that the thing tells you like, hey, battery's low, like, let's charge it. You know what I mean? I love that. And I think I just wish more people, I get it. Like, buying guns is expensive. This is what I tell people outside of the gun industry or of the gun world, right? I'm like, guns are an expensive hobby. But really, I mean, can you afford to go cheap on the safety aspect of it? I don't think so. Yeah.
Kev?
Yeah, I was just looking at your website, and it looks like you have a lot of almost like instant access type safes. Is there any kind of interest in exploring larger safes and maybe even small lock boxes, as your biometrics are seemingly so much better than the competitors? Or is this kind of your niche and you're going to stay with this type of design?
That's a really good question. I think for the time being, like, we just recently launched our second product line for the rifles and shotguns, and we designed it kind of similar to the Reach, where instead of like a big metal box, it's like more of like a rack that you can unlock quickly. This seems to be doing well, mainly because it came down all to the initial method that we tried to get fast access. So with big boxes, you still have to open the door, get the gun out, get the proper like stage one firing grip and all that sort of details that add time. So when we were first designing it, we were kind of basing it off like the Safariland ALS holster, where law enforcement's using that can get immediate access, but there still is a little bit of a security feature. And that's kind of what we did. That's what we focused on and worked out the best. Like, in order to get the fastest access, you can't really hide it inside a box. But as we progress, that's kind of when we started to work on our technology, make it super reliable. So there is opportunity, I think, down the line. We have talked to some gun safe companies about integrating our technology into their products. But we're still like a growing, working on our products. So I think that'll be maybe like later down the line.
Yeah, if you're just listening passively, pull up varasafety.com and you can browse. There's, you know, like, really, there's only two products essentially. There's the handgun and the rifle / shotgun, but they're really cool. They're low profile. They mount to like a wall or a nightstand or something. And I'm trying to figure out what the battery issue is here, because I've had a handful of quick access, or, you know, not quick access, full blown combo safes, and I don't understand why they can't just install an LED that says, you know, red, blinking red. It's like, no, when the battery's low, it just doesn't work. Now I have to go get the key. Help walk me through that and why your guys is different. And also, is it a disposable battery or is it rechargeable?
It's rechargeable. And then going back to your first part about why current products do certain things, part of it, I think, is just like the commodity aspect, where when you have companies just churning out another version of an existing product, sometimes there's shortcuts that are taken, there's like negligence, there was like a so because of that, there's sometimes some features that are like overlooked, such as battery life indicator. I think a good majority of products do try to have that feature in. But going back to our product with how we did battery life, so it's kind of funny because that was like a huge area where we had to make a lot of progress. Initially, we designed the product to always be charged in, and then when the power went out, then the internal rechargeable battery would kick in. And so for the Reach 1, our battery life was like 8 to 10 hours. It was only 8 to 10 hours because of how much power the processor and the fingerprint was drawing. And then we hired this phenomenal engineer who's just like an genius in embedded systems. He came in, redesigned the entire electronics from scratch, and then was able to make the battery life 8 months. And now it's like over 12 months just due to pure optimization without affecting performance. So now, like Mike and other people have the luxury of being able to like mount it without keeping it plugged in. Yeah. But that's kind of like the intent. We have a lot of customers and a lot of people on our team that are kind of like in the prepper mentality. So it's always have like a backup plan. So our product was initially designed so you could always keep it plugged in. If the battery or if the power goes out for any reason, then the internal battery can kick in. And that's kind of was our main process.
That's really cool. And that's good to know. How do you charge it if it's mounted away from a power station? Do you remove it and like plug it in for overnight or something and then you're good to go, or get an extra long extension cord?
So I also have mine mounted like in the closet as well too, where there is no, so what I do is it's a USB-C charger. So I just grab a power bank, plug it in, and it'll power back up or charge back up in like a couple hours. And then I just remove it. Yeah.
Okay. So you have to bring the cord to it. Otherwise you're having to unmount the thing, right?
Yep.
Okay. Sharon Hinchcliffe asks, for somebody who's worn off fingerprint ridges her experience is doing a lot of knitting and spinning yarn and stuff. I actually happen to have a friend whose fingerprints change. He's got some crazy skin thing, and it's hereditary. He can't be fingerprinted because his fingerprints literally change every, like, I don't know, year and a half. Do the electrical signal still work?
For almost 75 years, Strum Ruger & Company Incorporated has been a model of corporate and community responsibility. Their motto, Arms Makers for Responsible Citizens, echoes their commitment to these principles as they work hard to deliver quality and innovative firearms. They offer consumers almost 800 variations of more than 40 product lines across both the Ruger and Marlin brands. And since 2021, Ruger has been a strong supporter of Walk the Talk America, in full alignment with this mission and philosophy. We invite you to check out Ruger.com and browse their multiple products and help support our mission along the way. Walk the Talk America thanks Ruger for its continued support of this show and our mission.
Yep. I love this question because this was one of the challenges I think our engineers had to work on and figure out. With even like the Reach 2, once we switched over to our own system, we had a lot of people that like in construction worked with their hands, or like knitting and spinning yarn would be another one. Their fingerprints would wear down and the reliability of the fingerprint sensor would go down. So we're like, how could we combat this? Our Reach now has a learning algorithm that has been optimized further as well too. So as you use the product more often, it'll continually update your fingerprint profile. So now if you're like working out in the field and stuff like that, and your fingerprint starts to get worn, it'll just continually update and find new data points so that when you need it, it'll just unlock. And Francine, our director of operations, actually did this test where she realized when she comes right out of the shower, the fingerprints are a bit wrinkly.
Right.
And therefore it thinks it's a different fingerprint. So what she did was she, after she came out, she started to unlock it. It was a little bit slow at first, but the more she placed her fingerprint and started to learn, it got to a point now where even right after shower, when your fingerprint's like wrinkly and still wet, you can unlock it immediately because of that learning algorithm feature.
That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. So Timmy, like this is, it's really interesting because your story is pretty cool. Like you kind of designed this thing, you win a competition basically. Right. And, then you just keep moving forward as an engineer, not as a person who, I don't think you ran a business in college, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yep. No. Okay. So how do you make that decision? Like, when did it hit you? Like, this could be a real thing. Like I could do this. And it's kind of extremely brave of you. Cause I know like, you know, 22 or 21, I wasn't ready to run any kind of corporation or business or, you know what I mean? How'd you mentally grapple with that?
I think there were two huge advantages that I started off with that really helped a lot. The first was when I won the New York State business competition, that was like $100,000 competition. So I was able to like financially start the company. And then the other aspect that is equally as important, if not more, was my co-founder, Christine, joined and she brought a huge level of management and expertise. Like she has like over 20 decades of experience in like just executive management. She worked at Cargill for most of her career. And then she was like an active angel investor and just helping out local startups around the area when I met her. She was actually one of the judges in that competition. So after the competition, she was mentoring my business. So I reached out to her and we talked about working together. And then we decided that this was an opportunity that we could really start together. So she brought in a huge network, a bunch of experience. And I think that gave me the time to kind of grow into the ability to be a CEO and a leader. Yep.
Did you have any so-called gun people on board when you started this, or was it all basically people that are just like, no, love the concept, we'll learn about the gun culture and gun thing on the fly, as I did, right? Like,
so yeah, it's funny because like on, I guess when you first meet me and then some of the other team members, doesn't come across necessarily, but we are probably one of the most like 2A gun nut people that you can meet. Yeah, I would say we're pretty on like the very conservative gun rights side. Christine especially so. Like she, I don't think you can find a more like American conservative person than Christine. So at the very onset of the company, we were very much so consisted of gun people.
That right there, that testimony about looks can be deceiving, don't judge a book by its cover, is exactly why what we're doing with the therapeutic world is so important, because mm-hmm. counselors really don't know who's sitting across from them when it comes to this particular topic, because we in the gun community self-censor so frequently. You cannot make assumptions and start just going off half-cocked about, well, pardon the pun, about, you know, taking people's guns and if they're in a, you know, an anxious state or whatever, because you may chase away patients who then get worse because they're not getting the care, because we were inadvertently judgmental with our language, making a presumption that the person sitting across from us isn't who they are, right? So that's really good to know, and I'm really glad Mike asked that question. I mean, I stumbled through the gun culture too. I mean, when we first met, yeah, I'd been a lifelong gun owner, but I was never into it, and then what I realized was like, I had to play a role in this space of joining the two cultures. And then later I figured out, oh, there's this big, like the gun culture is like way bigger than I ever gave it credit and way more diverse than I ever thought it could be. So yep. that right there proves our point that like why this organization is so valuable. And I do want to talk about your suicide prevention stuff, because that's really why you're on here. It's nice to have a commercial for your products. We should do that with everybody who comes on. But, before we get there, I have a burning question that I know people are going to ask, which is, okay, biometric guns, right? Like, everybody we know poo-poos the concept, because when you need your gun, it's, you know, you don't want to risk the battery being dead or it being unreliable or it not recognizing your fingerprint or all these things, right? Okay. Problem is, we're literally asking him to do that with the locking device that's holding the gun. So maybe it just doesn't translate to the actual firearm because there's mechanisms inside that prevent, you know, space issues and that sort of thing and prevent it from being super effective. But talk a little bit about, if you could, if you guys have had any brainstorming at all, or at least rubbed elbows with people in that community where the biometric is on the firearm.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the questions we got very early on by like investors and stuff like that, to why don't you develop a smart gun instead of like a biometric gun safe. For me, it really came down to my personal preference, and also the market need was more so on not on the gun itself, but the gun safe.
Yep.
Of how can you make something that it's just simple. It's just hard to do extremely well. Of make something that is reliable to read your fingerprint and unlocks quickly. And that's all the safe really has to do. If you try to integrate this technology into a smart gun, the challenges increase like monumentally. Now you're dealing with trying to fit batteries into a very small, there's not much space in a gun. It's so efficiently designed from right. the get-go. And then the thing itself is like a small exploding container. So electronics don't do too well when exposed to a lot of heat and vibration and stuff like that.
Yeah, good
so
point.
The challenges of trying to get a smart gun, like politics aside, just pure technology, is like monumental. I've been lucky enough. It's a little bit controversial because of the like politics, but the number one smart gun company out there, like BioFire, I think they recently signed on like Alex Zedra too, and they're like launching their smart gun finally into the markets and production. I'm fortunate enough to know the founder, Kai. He started his journey when he was like 17. Genie, like extremely smart guy, but the amount of challenges that he had to take to get his product to market were insane. Like he had to raise over tens of millions of dollars in funding, was hiring like people from like NASA and all these different companies. So it's a much different scale and much bigger challenge. So that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think about the vibration. I just thought space issues and charging issues and that type of stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with Advan, but Advan has an actual like key lever lock that goes into the AR grip. So you can swap out your actual grip with this this bolt, this pin that moves up and holds the safety in place. So if it's on safe, you turn the key and it locks it into safe position. So without the key, you can't remove the thing in order to flip the selector switch to fire. That seems like it has opportunity to go away from the mechanical key, because in the grip, I'm assuming there's space, of course, right, in that hollow, empty container. And also it's far, I would think it's far enough away from the recoil that maybe the stuff inside the guts, the processor and all that could be insulated. But I don't know if you know those guys or if you've, you know, talked about it, or at least maybe with an AR it could work like that. I don't really know.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm not familiar, but I'll definitely look into those guys.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was really excited, once again, I'm just drawing back on our personal history, and I consider you a friend at this point. So and we've had a lot of conversations about the industry and outside of the industry. But Jake, when I fell in love with the product, right, I remember the first thing I said to Mike was, hey, get me on the phone with this guy. I want him to be part of WTTA. And it was really cool, and this is a segue, of course, right, to talk about suicide prevention, is Timmy's passion, the whole team's passion to actually be bigger than just a safe company, right? Because anybody could sell you a safe or, you know, a locking device for your firearm and hand it to you and feel good about that, right? Like, hey, I made some money, but I also gave them this great product, and it could end right there, right? Timmy took it a step further and like not only as kind of like in the startup phase or in the early phase, it's not like you were rolling with millions of dollars and you had money just to throw at WTTA, but you're like, yeah, man, let me figure out a way how we can be involved and support you. And I have it right here. This is the packaging of your product. You actually promote the relationship between WTTA and actually have the free and anonymous mental health screening link on the box of your product. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's to me, when Arms Corps put it on the box of their ammo and you put it on the box of your product, I can't thank you enough. That's a major step. You know what I mean? And that's not just like, yeah, we'll throw your flyer in there, which could potentially be tossed out. Like you have this thing where people could see it if they're just picking up the product on mm-hmm. a store shelf or thing like that. So I've always appreciated that. But I want to kind of transition into talking about your work behind the scenes. We've been in many events together in suicide prevention, better mental health, and saving lives. And what really drove you, obviously, what drives us is we don't want to see people hurt and die. But I mean, like, when did you know you wanted to be part of that space and not just, I'm selling you a safe, I'm good, I did my part?
I guess the main aspect is we're really, like, I'm personally driven by really wanting to make an impact in just, like, it sounds corny, but like saving lives through technology. I think it's because it's so possible. It's just a matter of someone needs to do it and do it very well and responsibly. So when the whole suicide prevention thing started was, it was interestingly enough, started with the VA in 2018. They had a challenge called Gun Safety Matters. And then Christine comes from a family of like veterans. So she's, like, her dad served, and actually, like, her grandfather died over in, like, Normandy and stuff like that and was buried there. So very long military history. So that was something very close to her. So we decided to kind of submit a couple ideas on how can we use some technology. And she actually brainstormed most of, like, these, like, features. And it was really interesting, too, because that's the same features that you had talked about when we first met. Except even more in detail. So that's kind of the main start of the, I guess, our entry into suicide prevention. It was through Christine's personal relationship through two veterans. And then from my side was like, oh, I could definitely see a potential for technology to really make an impact here, and we can actually get this done. And then fast forward, we slowly worked on it. Mainly, our main focus was growing, like, the safe business. But I think was it last year now or a couple of years ago, the VA announced the Mission Daybreak initiative. And during that time, we actually won a small grant from them. And during the accelerator week, we were able to make a working prototype of that app. And that app was just a culmination of so much work done by you, Mike, and Jake, too, in, like, the area of suicide prevention, but more importantly, bringing in, like, the aspects that gun owners care a lot about. Because it's one thing to create a solution, but it's another thing to do it properly, where now you're worrying about data privacy, making sure the data of all this stuff is not just given out to, like, government and stuff to be able to easily access. Like, that's such a huge value point for myself and gun owners. And just other aspects of mental health and integrating in the gun culture into it, I think, is what we have been, like, working on. It's definitely tough because I think the other major aspect of this is it's not commercially viable in terms of, like, a business standpoint. This isn't something that'd be necessarily adding to our bottom line or for profit. In fact, it does the opposite, where we're dedicating resources in times that's not going to generate any money. But I think we're doing it because it's such a, I guess, an important issue that we think we can really solve.
We want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Chattanooga Shooting Supplies, Inc. CSSI was founded in 1977 by two families that had a passion for hunting and the outdoors. That same passion holds true today for the second generation of family members and their 200-plus employees. Own a gun store or range? If so, you understand the importance of two-step distribution to help you meet the demand of your customers. Their mission is to exceed their customers' expectations with a strong service focus from a knowledgeable sales staff. an assortment of trusted and well-known brands, competitive pricing, and timely shipping. With over 50,000 SKUs of shooting and hunting-related products, they are in the business to help customers succeed. Learn more at ChattanoogaShooting.com.
Saying that you're saving lives through technology is not corny when you mean what you're saying. It can be corny if people are using it as a trope to generate buzz or clicks, but because you're saying with authenticity and you actually are serious about it, I don't think it's corny at all. And this is where I get to jump in and do a humble brag about the Noggin Notes app that we had some, 8 years ago now. And that's what you and I have talked about. It's like, you know, tracking your emotional functioning on a digital journal that's decentralized, not housed anywhere except maybe on your phone, is critical to retaining anonymity and also gaining insight. And this is one of the things where, as a fellow business owner, I don't make money off of podcasts. I don't make money off of app promotion. I don't make money off of YouTube distribution for, you know, watching me talk about shame and guilt. But what I am doing is helping to make Earth better. And same thing with hosting graduate students who are going through their practicum hours. That is, I mean, you could call it a loss leader, I guess, if we were marketing against other companies in competition, but we're so overwhelmed with demand for our services in Northern Nevada that I don't need marketing, right? We could kill the grad student program and I could fill those slots with revenue generating therapists and make more money. That's not the point though. I want to cultivate a culture and a mentality of burgeoning the profession, augmenting access, removing barriers to care. And if it costs me some money, okay. Like I'm trying to work myself out of a job anyway. That's totally counterintuitive to entrepreneurship. But the way that I think we do this is what you're talking about, which is not just simply intervening in the time of crisis at stage four, as Mike refers to it, which is borrowed from Mental Health America. We need to keep people healthy so they never even get there and make the whole suicide prevention community irrelevant. That's what I would like. I would like to teach people how to stay mentally well by accountability, connecting in with friends, anchoring themselves to something bigger than they are, you know, finding some meaning and purpose in life so that you're not despondent. You're not, you know, considering self-deletion. Then maybe, you know, our products are not even relevant anymore. That would be ideal. My question to you is, why are you passionate about this?
Why am I passionate about this?
Yeah, you have a personal story or is there a connection?
In terms of like the suicide prevention aspect?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mental health, yeah, because I mean, it's not on everybody's radar, right? That's not a thing that most people think about. They're like, I'm going to go into business and make products and sell them and it'll be good and everybody will benefit. They don't think altruistically beyond that usually. Yeah. And certainly not in this realm.
Yeah, I think in my family and myself too, there's been like certain times or incidents where I think it's caused me to take a step back and think about like mental health and firearms. Mainly because I think when I first owned firearms, I was very much so just so excited to finally own a firearm. Like I got my first AR when I was 18, had to rush before the California legislation got enacted to kind of help prevent that. I literally was able to get my first AR-15 when I was 18, handgun when 21. So I was so excited about the prospect of finally just owning my own guns. I didn't really think about what it meant to have firearms in a home where certain times there are like heated arguments or like people who are more prone to like mental health. So that's kind of when I was like, okay, this is something that is really important. And especially I think more so in like the younger generation and some of my generation too, but definitely more so in the younger one, mental health is a conversation that comes up a lot more. People are a lot more transparent about like, oh, I've thought about like killing myself and stuff like that. And that's when the concept of like lethal means come in. Like I had some people like that thought about like jumping off something and stuff like that. But in order to fully proceed with that, there was a lot of barriers that came up for them. And versus with a firearm, it's so simple and so deadly And that's kind of when I finally took a step back. I was like, okay, having the presence of a firearm also means I have to be much more responsible, because it's so much easier to die by suicide from firearm by any other means, really. So that's kind of how I think my personal aspect kind of plays into that.
Yeah. So where are you at with the app?
We have a fully working prototype, and now it's just a matter of implementing it into like commercial viability, which means like server integration, like a full stack software team to get it up and running. Because having like a prototype working MVP is very, very different to a product that's really ready to launch it to the market. That's where the gap is most expensive, I would say. That's kind of where we are right now. So we're looking for opportunities for more funding. But so yeah, it's definitely a lot harder, especially when you're labeled as like a gun company, and there's certain, I guess, you have to know this space of grant funding very well, which I don't yet.
Yeah. Your history though, with raising funds is, I've always been impressed with it. I want to talk about something that's actually really interesting. I found it very difficult, even, and Jay can attest to this, is like the way we navigate in this very awesome community, but also very guarded community that mm-hmm. basically is always on the defensive, you know, worrying about our rights. And we provide a service, I suppose you can call it a service, but we're an organization that a lot of people can get behind. Even mm-hmm. anti-gunners get behind us, yeah. right? And we are always put in these awkward situations where somebody that is pretty much can be radioactive to what we're trying to do wants to be buddies with us, or wants to respect us and wants to put our link on their website and say, oh, the people at Walk the Talk America are doing some amazing work. And, you know, and I always appreciate those people. I do appreciate that they appreciate the work that we do, even though we might disagree on certain things like restriction and the laws that they want to bring forward. We're not into feel good restriction. You make an awesome product, right? And mm-hmm. I feel like your product, even if you hate guns or you're anti-gun, is something that if someone tells that person about this product, unless the person's completely unreasonable, they're going to say something like, well, yeah, everybody should have one of those safes then. That makes mm-hmm. sense to me, right? How do you navigate through the world of, you know, even Brady and Moms Demand Action and Giffords, they all recommend safes, right? Like that's on their website. You're yeah. going to get lumped in to those people, whether you like it or not, or they're going to want to stand next to you and take a picture or things like that, right? How's that challenge been?
We definitely had to tread lightly on that aspect. Early on, I think this is kind of where it goes back to most people didn't know that we were like avid diehard gun owners, was because we had to be very careful in the initial beginning. Interestingly enough too, I would say a good majority of our investors are not gun owners themselves. They just really like the opportunity, the fact that it was providing safety to children, which was like our focus point in the early beginning. So we had to be very politically neutral when it came to our brand. Nowadays, I think that's getting much more and more harder. So that's kind of why we're shifting to a new initiative now too, with like YouTube, where we want to show people a little bit more behind the scenes of the company and show who's actually involved and who's running it. Because we have some like phenomenal gun owners, like Stacia recently came back from like a week long trip in Colorado when she went elk hunting during hunting season. So these are like gun owners, like Drew and Al from different, I guess, like fields of gun ownership, hunting, like just shooting and shooting sports and the like. But yeah, I think the answering that's kind of hard, where there definitely are people I think that most gun owners would immediately associate with like gun control. And therefore, if any association now marks them as like branded, and I think that's kind of hard. That we're in that cancel culture nowadays, both on like that liberal side, but also in some degrees on the conservative side, where any view that's not aligned with yours immediately gets canceled, and there's not much leeway. I think that's where you made the joke too, of like, don't take any pictures with like Jeffrey Epstein or Hitler. But we're talking about in relation to this. Yeah, Mike actually sent me like an edited photo of me like standing next to like Jeffrey and Hitler.
At a party.
At a party. Just to get the point across of like, just be careful who you like talk to and speak with. But at the same time, it's unavoidable. And I think it's just a matter of, like you said, coming straight on. If there are any people, just make sure they know where you stand. Just communicate that clearly. Yeah.
It's one of those things that drives me nuts, honestly. Like the very concept of thinking that you know everything that you possibly can about a viewpoint is in itself absurd. I'm pro-gun. Okay, cool. How pro-gun? Like there's a whole continuum. And you, the 97%.org people are the ones who pick gun owners that are somewhere else on that continuum besides where Timmy O is, right? And they use that. And so it becomes this very binary perspective. And you can pick any topic in America right now, or I mean, even the world, and there's going to be different perspectives within a perspective. So the very idea that you would label somebody and box them up, quantify them, set them aside, and pretend that you know everything that you know about the individual based on one view is absurd. And honestly, it's what stands in the way of saving lives. It's what we get friction for when we go do a presentation on what Walk the Talk America does at a Students Demand Action event on the San Jose State University campus, right? Fortunately, that went over pretty well, but we did get some friction from some overly rigid thinkers in the gun community who are like, you should never be with those people. It's like, well, all right, let's break this down for a second. If we never, to use that word, if we never engage the people who don't quote unquote think like us, how will they ever change their minds? That's presuming that we're right, right? Like that's presuming that we're correct on all fronts. If you never engage those people, they never have an opportunity to change their mind. That's ridiculous. Like if you want to spread the message, you got to engage people. You got to meet them where they are. So I don't understand. I mean, I do because I work in psychology, but I don't understand how people can go through life with that mentality, just lobbing grenades and then expect to win on anything. Like all you're doing is spreading destruction. You need to have diplomacy. You need to have some measure of decorum and appreciation for what other people have to bring to the table. I don't know where Mike went. Did he just like disappear into a vortex?
If you're a firearms owner, and especially if you carry concealed, we invite you to enroll in a membership with our partner, the United States Concealed Carry Association, at uscca.com. The USCCA is more than 700,000 Americans from every faith, political stance, and walk of life spanning multiple demographics. They provide life-saving education and industry-leading training, some of which comes in the form of our firearms and mental health videos that we have recently produced and which will be made available to the membership over the next 12 months. We recommend that you obtain self-defense liability insurance available through Delta Defense and the USCCA so that if you find yourself in an act of lawful self-defense, you will be prepared for what happens before, during, and after that incident. With the common mission of saving lives, Walk the Talk America is proud to partner with the USCCA and Delta Defense, and we invite you to check out all they have to offer at uscca.com.
His big fancy camera that makes his skin look really great tends to die out, and then he has to update the battery.
He's not using one of Timmy's batteries. That's the problem. If it was a Vara safety camera, he'd be fine. So, yeah. All right. So we've covered the app. We've covered your products. We've covered, you know, why you're involved in this mission, and you know, out of the goodness of your heart. I wanted to recap that DJ Plain I said, I'm in my 50s and have lost most of my idealism. So it's great to hear it blooming in others. Hope springs eternal. Alexander Pope. It's a quote. Why are you not black-pilled? Is it just because you're young? Because I'm in my mid-40s and I'm flirting with being black-pilled, but I still hold on to like, I want to live in a community that's safe, that's healthy, that's happy. I don't want to see my kids getting bullied. You know, I still hold on to that, even though I'm approaching nihilism. How do you do that?
I guess it's easier for me because I start off as a nihilist. And
tell that story. What do you mean? You start off, but then you changed?
But the other fact is you and Mike are working in a space that is so incredibly difficult in terms of the mental health awareness, like the politics of it is just so draining. I have the fortunate luxury of that my main core business is still in the gun safe side, the biometric gun safe. So it's really exciting to see the company grow, work with incredible people, get reviews from people being like, this is incredible. There's a lot of challenges in just being an entrepreneur and growing a business now, and I've been able to fully embrace that aspect. So being able to see the progress that we make as a team and having the team around me and having milestones that we hit, selling 10,000 units in a certain time period and stuff like that, I think it just is really exciting in that journey. The suicide prevention part, I kind of dive in sometimes as we go. And I think that's what keeps me afloat because, yeah, it is a pretty big anchor in terms of all the stuff that you have to deal with, funding wise, getting progress. Yeah, that's a whole nother ball game. So for me, it's not as bad as you guys have it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much funding on the side that people would consider anti-gun. Right. And Jake, you talked about that spectrum. We've literally sat and talked with people from Moms Demand Action, when we've crossed paths at events, and they don't think of themselves as anti-gun, no. Right? They genuinely don't think they're anti-gun. They will look you in the face, and they don't understand. For us, anti-gun is when you throw a butt on anything, right? I'm all for people having guns, but right? And those butts is what separates us, yeah, because we look for these alternative solutions. But it is very frustrating. And I've had this conversation amongst, WTTA board members. It's the people that have the money, the people that are throwing money behind stuff are the people that we don't mess with, right? We don't talk to, we can't. And I can only imagine how difficult it would be if somebody came in and they're like, Timmy, I have $15 million to take your company to the next level. You know what I mean? But now you have to be like, okay, I'd be accepting that from somebody that has an anti-gun stance or, viewed by our community as anti-gun. It's a very difficult situation to be. It'd almost be like being in a Twilight Zone episode, right? Because it's like, do you take the money and run and sell out? No, absolutely you don't, right? Because it could be a killer. In terms of your business. So it's a hard world to navigate. And I wish people would appreciate a little bit more kind of what we go through, because we're going to run into people or come across or have to work with people. And like you said, Jake, if we let them control the narrative or we don't educate them, I've been one of those people that's like, why do we dumb ourselves down in the gun community? We act like we can't win arguments or we can't, they touch us on the arm and then all of a sudden we're for red flag laws. I don't know what happened. I caught a cold. You know what
Thanos.
I mean?
Thanos.
Yeah. And I'm like, why aren't we the confident ones? Why aren't we walking into the rooms going, well, I'm going to change their mind, or I'm going to open their mind, or I'm going to make them think about unintentional consequences of these feel good legislation laws that people put forward to think that they're actually doing something. I feel for you, man. Just so the listening audience knows, when I was sending in a picture of him partying with Epstein at the club and Hitler, I was just, I was having a good time because I know exactly what it's like to be in that situation when people are like, you're awesome, I want to take a picture with you, or you're awesome, I love what you're doing, I want to put the link to you guys on our website. And I'm like, don't do that. Just be a fan from afar. Let's wave to each other across the room, So.
Yeah. Before you know it, you become Jordan Peterson taking a picture next to Pepe the Frog flag.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, but that's the world we live in. If we're as the gun industry, or the gun community, and maybe I'm out of my mind. Well, I am. Okay. But if I truly believe that we could be the leaders in this space and be the example and set the example, we have to go through that other side. And we have to go through that other side confidently. We have to have intentionality. We have to, all the things you talk about, Jake, like we have to let people know where we stand, why we stand on those values, like the why. We do not agree with red flag laws, right? And this is why. Let me explain it to you. Let me show it to you on our website. Let's have statements, right? Now, Timmy, we've talked about that. What better way? Yep. To let it be known than to have the actual statement of where you stand on this stuff on your website. So when people, especially people that are in chat rooms or, you know, forums, say something really goofy, you'd be like, hey, it's right there on our website, right? Because yep. All the anti-gun people have their stance on their website. Like, they'll let you know exactly where they're at with red flag laws. And we need to do a better job of letting people know where we're at and the why.
Yep.
That's the soapbox. I'm off.
That was a good one, though.
Thank you.
Nice work. Well, we're over an hour, and I think, you know, we've probably expired most people's attention spans for this. So where can people reach you?
You can reach us at varasafety.com. So it's varasafety.com. Yeah. And then our social media is starting to grow too. So we're trying to be more responsive there, make content, I guess, like I said, like show more of the behind the scenes. Yeah.
And the product, you guys do a lot of work through Amazon, correct?
No, we don't. We're not on Amazon.
Oh, you're off Amazon. Sell directly
through Amazon. Yeah. We only sell through our direct to website.
Okay. And you used to do Amazon, correct?
I think we tried, like, one of the early batches got put on like Amazon, but it's kind of like a little bit of a mess because you have to like select what type of handgun make and model you have. Amazon doesn't allow for that. So a lot of people were buying like the wrong insert and stuff and having some issues.
Oh, that's right. That is one thing with the product is that I remember because I think at the time when you introduced the product to me, I had the Slovakian guns. I had the Grand Power guns, right? And where some of that was like figuring out which one, because I remember you had sent me the different sleeves and figuring out what worked. You know what I mean? So, and roughly, just so the listeners understand, like, what's the price point of this?
$279. Okay.
$279. And take it from me, from everyone that's listening, if you have that, it's well worth it. You will be impressed by this product. I'm not just saying this because Timmy's my friend. I was into the product before I actually met the man behind the curtain. Right. So, it is definitely worth picking up. And your commitment to making Earth better with promoting mental health and suicide prevention, I can't thank you enough. Like I said, you put it on the box, man. Like that's going all in on your belief in Walk the Talk America and everything we do. So if we can ever do anything for you, you know, you let us know. And stop taking pictures with Epstein, man. Like,
Mike, you got to ask him your question. You can't let him off the hook.
That's true. That's true. Timmy, how do you tend to your mental health?
How do I? I have a really good support group around me with friends and stuff. But I just like going out and doing stuff. It's like going outside, shooting, like rock climbing. Like that just helps reset me. So I'm pretty simple when it comes to that. Just get me outside with some friends and my mental health is pretty much reset.
It's good. We prescribe that. And in my world where I come from, we tell people, get outside. And of course, you know, if you take our cultural competence class, we're encouraging you to prescribe shooting to people also. So go shoot. It makes you feel better. Well, thank you very much for carving out the time, Timmy. Thank you for what you're doing. The innovation that you're producing, that you're presenting to the world. Thanks for the creativity. And I'm going to go buy one now. I have to, cause I want to change up how I store my firearms, here. And honestly, like if you're hearing that $279 price point, I mean, the boxes that I've bought, the little guys, I mean, they're $150 anyway. throw another $100 down and get a really super reliable one with a long battery life. You know what I mean? I mean, you're not swapping out AAAs all the time. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for your commitment to our work and the overlap. We really appreciate it. It means a lot. I'm glad to know you. I'm glad that we connected through this, and I'm proud of what you're doing. It's really easy to be affiliated with your people and your brand and what you got going on. So, thank you to you. Thank you to our platinum sponsors. Thank you to everybody who helps make this happen. Thank you for everybody who attended online for this live broadcast. And if you downloaded this, please share it around and let everybody else know that, you know, Timmy and Vara Safety are doing really cool stuff and helping them make Earth better. On behalf of all of our Walk the Talk America family, we wish you all great mental wellness. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
This is the Justice Report weekly recap for March 24th to 30th, 2024. Today's story. Patriotic Alternative demonstrates for release of political prisoner Sam Melia. Leeds, United Kingdom. The pro-white nationalist organization Patriotic Alternative marched to demand the release of political prisoner Sam Melia on Saturday. The protest would be their largest demonstration to date and comes amid a surge of UK thought crime convictions, which have since gained international attention. The march, which included PA leaders Mark Collett and Laura Towler, was conducted in Leeds city centre, drawing dozens of attendees from across the UK. The demonstration eventually made its way to Leeds Civic Hall in Millennium Square, where the group distributed leaflets and gave speeches in front of a busy crowd. Yesterday, Patriotic Alternative held our largest flash demo to date, read a statement on PA's official Telegram page. Attention was drawn to the draconian laws that the anti-white state uses to unfairly target patriotic people. This is just the beginning. We will continue campaigning for a stop to the political persecution of nationalists, it continued.
Today's story. Middle schoolers are charged with anti-Semitic hate crimes, Calvert, Maryland. Three middle schoolers have been criminally charged over an alleged incident involving anti-Semitic harassment. The suspects, all of whom are only 13 years old, now face hate crime violations in the latest push to prosecute children for hate speech in the United States. According to the Calvert County State's attorney, three young students at Plum Point Middle School in Southern Maryland have been charged with hate crimes in connection to the harassment of a fellow Jewish student. The 13-year-old suspects are alleged to have displayed swastikas, made Nazi salutes, and directed offensive comments to a classmate because of the classmate's religious beliefs, according to prosecutors. All three of the accused were not identified due to their status as minors, and the alleged comments were not explained further. According to the Office of the State's Prosecutor, Robert Harvey, the alleged harassment began in December of 2023. The unidentified victim is then said to have contacted the state police, who filed charges after an investigation determined the accused had been asked numerous times to stop. The Maryland Department of Juvenile Services is now reviewing the case. It's frankly astonishing that nearly 400 years later, some people continue to persecute others based upon their religion, said Harvey in a request for comment by the Washington Post. Religious persecution has no place in our society. While neoliberal repression would manifest itself very quickly in defense of Jewish students at Plum Point, the same could not be said about white students in similar situations. In 2023, white students of Kenwood Elementary School in Springfield, Ohio, were forced to support Black Lives Matter by a gang of black students. A video of the humiliating incident was later released to the Justice Report through a Freedom of Information Act request, where it quickly went viral.
Today's story. A mixed-race gang is charged for the beating death of a homeless white man. Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
A homeless white man who fell victim to a brutal assault by a multi-ethnic gang has now died, the Justice Report has learned. A criminal complaint tied to the incident asserts the beating was launched after the man tried to stop the group from stealing items out of unlocked cars. According to reports, 61-year-old Donald G. Mitchell Jr. was found face down on the concrete in City Parking Lot 16 after sustaining a violent attack by up to three men. Mitchell, who is believed to be living in a camper attached to his car, was transported by an ambulance to a local hospital for treatment. Due to a significant brain bleed, however, he was flown via helicopter to a different facility. The next afternoon, Mitchell died from his injuries, with doctors noting that every bone in his face had been fractured, along with several ribs. For the crime, police arrested three men aged 18 to 20 who were in the area after having been denied access to a local bar. A criminal complaint tied to the incident asserts that 18-year-old Christian J. Emerson, 19-year-old Arlen O. Sangster, and 20-year-old Brandon L. Baim had beaten Mitchell after he confronted them stealing items out of unlocked cars. The document alleges that after Mitchell had caught them rummaging through his truck, he asked them, "What are you doing in my truck? What did you take from my truck?" An eyewitness said she heard one of the men reply, "You got three big guys coming up on you. You want to mess with us?" Witnesses state that all three men had then begun to repeatedly punch Mitchell until he fell to the ground. Then, they were alleged to have kicked and even stomped the 61-year-old in the head, causing the worst injuries. For more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. Become a paid supporter and gain access to our full archive of audio articles. And enjoy the Justice Report on the go.
The British royal family, who own over 16% of the entire planet, seems to be falling apart, which is nothing to mourn, for they are one of the most monstrous families on Earth. In 1964, the Queen and Prince Philip visited a school in British Columbia. Former resident William Coombs claims that 10 of his classmates were taken by the Queen and Prince Philip, never to be seen again. The notorious pedophile and necrophiliac Jimmy Savile was close friends with the royal family. Charles wanted him to be Prince Harry's godfather. He was awarded the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire in 1971 and knighted by the Queen in 1990. Prince Andrew has been a regular at Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile island. King Charles was close friends with a bishop who was convicted of raping over a dozen boys. A former student of Aldenham School claims that students were routinely raped and tortured by members of the Worshipful Company of Brewers, which was frequented by Jimmy Savile, King Charles, and Lord Mountbatten, who has been accused of raping an 11-year-old boy. Jeanette Archer says she was abused by the royals as a young child and says that they are reptilians. According to Princess Diana's friend, Christine Fitzgerald, Diana's nickname for the Windsors was the Reptiles and used to say that they are not human. While this may sound strange, most royal bloodlines in history were said to be the offspring of reptilians, often described as dragon or serpent people. In an interview with David Icke, Arizona Wilder told her story of being bred for the express purpose of conducting rituals for the royal family.
I was bred for this role that I fulfill. I was being abused and traumatized and on purpose for the mind control that they need someone to go through to do whatever they say.
She explained the importance of blood rituals.
What it's all about is that the blood and the menstrual blood contains something that is important for the propagation of this race that is controlling things on this planet.
She explained the infamous adrenochrome.
For it to be secreted in the blood is they need terrorization of their victims. They are killed at that moment as they are staring into their eyes.
She said when the royals and others smelled blood, they would shapeshift into reptilians.
When the victims are starting to be sacrificed, it's the scent of the blood. They start shapeshifting at that point in time. They can't hold their shape when this happens.
The human shape.
The human shape they cannot hold. They go back into reptilian shape as this is happening because it's a type of excitement of the kill. I have seen at rituals, I have seen George Bush. I have seen the two sons when they were young.
Are these the sons that have become governors since?
Yes. One is in Florida and one is in Texas. Madeleine Albright, I have seen Henry Kissinger. I've seen the Queen Mother there. And I have seen Princess Margaret there. I've seen Charles there. And they shapeshift.
What have you seen the Queen or any of the royal family do in relation to that? Have you seen them sacrifice and consume human flesh?
I've seen all of them drink human blood and consume human flesh. There are certain times when there will have been someone doing a sacrifice and it's not happening fast enough for them. So they will step in and finish it themselves. These reptilians live hundreds of years. And so they have to have taken more than one human body to live in.
David Icke predicted years ago that the royal family would be removed to make way for a one-world government. And Dr. Michael Sala, who has been researching exopolitics for 20 years, has a different theory which could explain the fading of the royal family.
The ousting of the Saqqara reptilians in 2021 and how the deep state is panicking without their overlords. What about these reptilian extraterrestrials, and what do you know about this?
What we have is a lot of evidence going back thousands of years that there are these reptilian species that have played a big role in controlling the Earth. And the name of the kind of apex reptilian is Saqqara. So these are kind of like dragon-like creatures, you know, 8 foot to 12 foot tall. And they apparently have been forced to leave our solar system recently with the arrival of these kind of more senior species. They're here to watch our emergence into a planetary, into a galactic culture. They're here to watch that. But once that has happened, over a period of maybe a dozen years or so, they're going to leave. And then we're going to have to fend for ourselves. So it's almost like, you know, where we're breaking out of the shell. But once we've broken out of the shell, like any little animal that's just broken out of a shell, the parent has protected you, but you're on your own now. You know, good luck.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Thank you for watching the latest Greg Reese Report. Be sure to go to reesereport.com to see my latest videos, sign up for my free newsletter, and subscribe for exclusive content. And be sure to support my sponsor at InfoWarsStore.com.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
InfoWars is listener-supported, and we appreciate your donations. But buy a product and support your health, too. The curcuminoids in turmeric is one of nature's most powerful and beneficial medicines. Raw turmeric root contains about 5% of this incredible medicine. But our bodies has been formulated to contain over 95%. This makes bodies one of the most powerful natural antioxidants in the world. Combined with other natural herbs, bodies will help improve mobility, flexibility, and immunity. Get some today now 40% off. Support your health and support the InfoWar at InfoWarsStore.com. In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic, but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.
I meant what I fucking said. And now I got a bunch of people asking me, oh, what are we going to do? What should we do? Educate yourself. Spread the word. The United Nations has just declared war on the truth. They're telling you outright, if you speak up, you're a conspiracy theorist. Shouldn't be believed. Should be approached in a certain fashion. The authorities should be contacted and all kinds of neat shit. Do they want war? Arm yourself with facts. Get out there and start telling the people. You don't want to do it on social media? Do it in person. Do it on the telephone. Do it like we used to do, standing around on the street corner having a coffee. Do you know who your enemy is? The World Economic Forum. 51 years they've been working at this. They've been planning and scheming, working as hard as they can. And now, here we are. Klaus Schwab has admitted that for over 45 years, they've been working directly with the CCP. Now here we are in Canada and the U.S. We got 5G, military-grade 5G technology right across the country. Where did it come from? Who owns that technology? And what's going to happen when they don't like us? Get to know your enemy. Get to know the facts. Speak the fuck up. Be a warrior. That's what we need to do. Instead of following Marcus like a bunch of fucking sheep.
This is James Edwards, your host of the Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.